Hello, and welcome back to the Self-Healer Soundboard. On our previous episode, we introduced the concept of the inner child directly from our new workbook, How to Meet Yourself. On today's episode, we're going to continue on with the inner child, but more about the personal experience of interacting with our own inner children and embodying the inner child itself.
Speaking from my own personal experience and imagining that many of you listening might resonate, I know for me, when I first started to read about what I was thinking was a really important concept, this idea of the inner child. When I thought about kind of embodying the healing journey of acknowledging that I have this little being inside of me, I felt really weird, if I'm going to be perfectly honest. It felt really unfamiliar and really uncomfortable in a lot of ways. And for those of you who tuned into last episode, we talked a lot about what the inner child is and how it's the subconscious part of our mind that for a lot of us contains our suppressed emotions, our unmet needs, our, you know, attachment habits and patterns, in addition, of course, to our playfulness, our curiosity, our intuition. And ultimately, for me, what I've come to realize is that discomfort, where that was coming from, was all of the unmet emotional needs that I had accumulated for a lifetime. I was so disconnected from myself and from my emotions that when I was introduced to this concept of reconnecting with this being, of course, I would feel nothing but uncomfortable because it was so unfamiliar and had been for decades for me.
Well, for many, it might feel weird and uncomfortable or unfamiliar, like it was for Nicole, learning about our inner child, let alone embracing our own inner child. For others, and maybe you're a combination of the two, it might also feel really confusing. For me, largely, always teaching children, always working directly with children, feeling very maternal and connected to children, the concept or idea that I had an inner child didn't so much make me feel weird or uncomfortable. It felt really confusing. And I've only realized that in reflection of just even chatting about this podcast and, you know, hearing for Nicole how learning that concept at first felt weird. And I did a little scan and inquiry with myself. I was like, well, it never felt weird, though I remember being so confused about understanding the concept. And when I look back at my childhood, there was such minimal time in my childhood actually being a child. So the idea that there was this inner child within me just seemed so foreign and wouldn't really connect because I couldn't even remember my own experience of actually being a child within my own childhood.
I'm relating to that a lot, even in the aspect of the playfulness. I think that's what's coming to mind, Jenna, as I'm hearing you even share. And of course, you know, while I really lack the ability to call to mind what my childhood looks like, I've seen pictures, and I've seen a lot of pictures with my dad and my sister in particular playing with me. And, you know, we might have paints out. I liked arts and crafts. So here comes creativity in the conversation. So I'm seeing, you know, kind of what is reflecting back to me, I would call them moments of playfulness. Yet when I really think back to it, I don't feel like there was a lot of playfulness within the family. And I share that in a couple, at this point, gosh, it was several episodes ago now. I shared a story of having a memory of my mom in particular and us having a very playful moment. We were coming back from New York City. We rode the train up from Philadelphia. We spent the day, my mom, my dad, and I. And we visited one of the biggest toy stores, FAO Schwarz, for anyone who is on or around New York City and is familiar with that. And I was so excited. And we spent a couple hours looking at toys. And we left and we had bought these silly glasses where you put them on and it made you look like you had these really googly eyes. And I remember riding the train home with my mom in particular and her and I just laughing and putting these glasses on each other and really, really laughing. And the reason why I think this moment sticks out for me in particular is because there wasn't so many moments of that lightness, that playfulness, that fun. So to speak to your point, you know, when we lack safety, and for me, it was a lot around emotional safety, not having the ability to express and feel the security in expressing all of the emotions, what happens is, and we've visited this concept a lot even throughout the workbook episodes in terms of the nervous system. When our nervous system is activated, when we're feeling overwhelming stress and we're under-supported in coming back into that safety, when we don't have someone to co-regulate with, we get stuck in what we call survival mode. And when we're in survival mode, playfulness, joy, creativity even, there is no space or room for that. And, you know, alongside of that, I have very limited memories of my mom engaging outside of that moment on the train in play with me. And like I did just share, you know, there were moments where I was creating things. It wasn't necessarily, for me, it was very much driven toward the perfect creation, the perfect art, the art that could hang on the wall. And a lot of absence of that freedom of creativity where we're just painting however it is that, you know, we want in terms of just desiring the self-expression. So while there was creativity, for me, again, it still felt like it was driven toward a goal. And when I look back in terms of the playfulness, there wasn't many moments of that. Not because my family didn't want to, because we were all locked in that same survival mode. So very much like you, when I'm thinking back to this childhood, I mean, very much I was described by strangers as the little girl who carried the weight of the world on her shoulders. What's wrong? Smile, lighten up. I would hear those things. And that very much, I think, was that outward reflection of that lack of childlike nature. And it wasn't just for me, the child in the home, it was for everyone in the home.
It's so interesting hearing you talk just then, because when I think back to my own childhood, as I just said, you know, that I didn't spend much time being a child. It was so serious. I was my parents' parent. We mentioned co-regulation, and there was not a soul in sight to regulate with because there was no one around that was regulated. And while there didn't seem like much childlike wonder and play in my childhood, I'll admit that even while you're talking, I'm thinking of all these memories out in nature with my siblings, with my two brothers and the neighborhood kids, with a lot of imagination, a lot of play, and a lot of creativity. And I can see now that that was honestly a saving grace, leaving the home, the actual dwelling and the circumstances, the people, the relationships, largely my parents, the drugs, the abuse that was happening there, and going out into a world with other children or also maybe largely by myself. I see a comfort in, even to this day, I'm most expressive, I'm most playful, I'll dance the most, all when I'm alone. When I'm independent from others, and on my own, I feel safe in my own controlled container to allow myself to express and to be. You plop me back into my house and it's the opposite. You have a child who just looks sad and is kind of lifeless because you can see that instant difference. I mean, one is a child's body and nervous system actually connected back to its original form in nature with trees and birds and streams. And the next is going back into an actual force field of fire, according to my nervous system. So we can start to see two different environments that allowed different parts of our inner child to come forward, to express themselves. It was innate for me to go spend entire days, every day of the week, really almost every day of the year, outside away in nature because that was a solace. I didn't know that as a child. Oh, I'm going out here to heal and be a child. I just felt called to it. My body felt called to it.
Hearing you say that, you know, it occurs to me, while I did have neighborhood friends, and actually it was a bit later that I, you know, discovered my neighborhood friends. I was, I think, probably around 11 or 12. So there was a large portion of my early childhood, all the years up until that point, where while I did have siblings, my sister being 15 years older than me, my brother being 18 years older than me. So by the time I was born, he was more or less making his way out of the family home. And my sister was, you know, physically present, though she was a teenager. So in terms of developmentally, there was a huge age gap. And in terms of what her life looked like, she was at the stage of life becoming more independent, going out with her friends and, you know, developing that own separate life for herself. So while there were siblings in my home, my experience was much more of an only child, not having within that home those connections, those, you know, siblings my age, or even those friends. Like I said, it took several years for me to even find them because I was really shy. And looking back, I now, you know, see the shyness, the difficulty really connecting with other people really came from those first relationships that lacked that emotional connection. And what I would do and still have, you know, kind of the inclination or the drive to do now, instead of looking or asking for emotional support, you know, from my sister who was, you know, around and available to me, from my parents when I was struggling, it was really hard for me to let them know when I was sad, when I was upset, when I was having an emotion, because no one showed me or modeled how to do that. No one really did that in the home. So the way it would express in my body, in my relationships within the home is I would, and I think I was just sharing this with you earlier, maybe this morning it even was, where I was saying I would wish or even feign physically becoming hurt or sick. Because in those moments, and I was very athletic, so I was always playing sports with the possibility of being hurt. If I was injured, if I was physically ill, that felt safer to me to need and receive the connection from my mom in particular, because she was bedside when I was sick. I have a lot of memories of being sick, sitting in her bed with her, watching television. That was our together time. And, you know, I still have moments to this day, even recently now, the past couple of days, I've been having a lot of emotions come up, everything from feeling really angry to feeling really low and really sad. And I catch my inner monologues. This is a lot of times where we meet our inner child, you know, saying and wishing that I was in need, in physical need. I was hurt. I would even sometimes, if I'm upset with someone over the years, hear myself very similar to my mom in my mind's eye say, well, you'll miss me if I'm sick. What'll happen if something happens to me? Won't you be upset? And, you know, for me, all of this is just indication of how still uncomfortable it is for me to tell someone when I need emotional support, to allow someone to be present with me. There's still a little child inside of me that only feels the right to support or need when it's something physical or, you know, illness based. I'm having a health related concern. And even in those moments, there's a deep desire to be made better by this person. Instead of what I'm now learning is no one can make anyone feel any differently than they are. What our inner children all desire is company in our feelings, is letting someone that you know and trust know when you're upset and not actually putting the expectation on them because they can't make you feel better, but allow them to share space with you alongside of you in whatever it is that you're feeling. But I shared all that to say, it's still really difficult. I still have those moments where I'm, you know, damning your name because you're not there for me, or I'm demanding you to be close to me and I'm making it really uncomfortable for you to be close to me, or I'm wishing myself to be sick or something wrong so that then you could come feel bad for me. Really what my inner child wants is just emotional connection.
Everything you just described about your inner child feels like a direct replica of my father. And I can see many times over my life where I learned different illnesses he has. When I'm 12, he tells me he has 3 years left to live. And I believed all of these things. I would write, I have one poem, I have part of it, a chunk of it memorized. I'll have to find it somewhere. It's front and back. And it starts with, "Daddy, I'm writing you this poem to show how I feel. There are too many words, it's impossible to heal." Those are like the first four lines of this. I think I'm maybe 8 or 9 when I wrote this, but I genuinely was under the belief that my dad was dying. And, you know, I had seen him overdose. I had seen him take pills. I had seen him drunk. So without knowing the details of that or of addiction, I saw he's not well. You know, dad's at rehab, dad's in the hospital, or dad's away. And just hearing you speak, I kept thinking of him so much because it doesn't allow or make okay. It doesn't make okay, I should say. It doesn't make okay the abuse or the abandonment that was received by him, though it does offer me opportunity to see him as this wounded little boy, very much like the wounded little Nicole that then responded that way. And I was the same with him when we're talking about this need to fake illnesses or fake injuries. I was a gymnast my entire life, still kind of am. And always I was getting hurt, breaking fingers, doing things, genuine hurt. Though then also I noticed when I transitioned from gymnastics to also have basketball that I didn't quite get as instantly hurt and it didn't seem as dangerous, I would start faking injuries. I would roll my ankle. I would get hurt on the court and have the entire game stop because my dad just happened to randomly be at this one basketball game and could come and take care of me. And he could see right through it. He kind of gave me that tough love that actually didn't look like much love at all. It was sort of like, you know, suck it up, buttercup, be tougher, would maybe throw me an ankle brace and say, onward. So I learned too, okay, well, I have to push myself. I can't get hurt. Even if I get hurt, I just have to continue on. Though in each of those moments where I can see how he did that to me, you experienced this, I'm over here experiencing doing the same thing. So you have three different individuals experiencing that same thing when we boil it all down. And something important to note here, because sometimes it's hard for us to love the darker parts of ourselves, or what we might call the shadow parts or the less than ideal parts in something like manipulation. We don't look at manipulation as an ideal trait, right? We don't walk around saying, oh, I'm so manipulative. And, you know, this is like an honor. We don't wear a badge for that. Most of us are unwilling to even accept that we might have a tendency to manipulate. Well, this is a really great opportunity to have some compassion and hold space for where patterns and behaviors like that come from. Because the experience that was just described by Nicole about little Nicole faking these illnesses or getting hurt to spend and have that time with her mom or to be looked after and cared for, me doing the same thing with my dad doing the same thing with me, granted he was an adult at this point, those are all forms of manipulation. We learned as children how to manipulate the environments and the situations and relationships around us to meet our needs. Because at the beginning and end of the day, that's how wise we are. That's how magical and miraculous as beings we are. We are going to subconsciously and innately go about getting our needs met, no matter what the environment around us is. And however the pathway is that we then go to get those needs met, over time, those become consistent habits that then turn into conditioned behavior, a conditioned mind that then becomes who we are in a matter of expressing ourselves out into the world. So it's not that we are manipulative or that we are the habits that we learned as a result of this. Those were all adaptations that were all an innate response to survive and have our needs met because the caregivers in our environments were not meeting those needs.
And kind of along the same lines as manipulation, I think one of the another difficult things to wrap our head around when we have this habit ourselves, which I do, which is why I'm going to share right now, the tendency to externalize blame or to always point the finger at someone else for being the problem. Someone else in our personal relationships, the stranger we met on the street, circumstances, you know, by, you know, out, completely outside of our control in terms of the systems and the structures of life, we feel a victim to someone else. And for me, that was, again, all locked in our own survival mode for very understandable reasons, feeling reactive, where none of the adults or individuals in my home were able to feel any sense of control over their response. I then developed that same pattern of pointing the finger of always blaming. And I can see myself into this day in moments where something upsetting is happening. And I think we just talked about this a few days ago on this podcast. It is so easy for me to slip into immediately, well, this isn't my fault. This is the issue, someone outside. And really understanding the message that continues to send to my inner child is that that being inside of me is powerless. And one of the major shifts in terms of healing and working with our inner child, once we come to the awareness that we have one, is learning, we use the word embody, but learning how to empower our actions, not just fall right back into those habits, learning how to now take the responsibility. That's what my journey is about, saying, yeah, other people are affecting the climate in which I'm going to enter the conversation or the experience, though they don't have all of the control. So making that shift is something I'm continuing to work on by noticing first when I'm falling into those old habits and then giving myself the opportunity to live a new experience, to empower that little being who understandably was afraid of the world, was carrying the weight of the world on their shoulders because she never felt like she could affect any change. So now it is about embodying the practice, the daily behaviors and habits of standing in my power, of affecting that change, regardless of what's happening around me.
Which may literally look like stepping back and trying to paint this external picture in your mind of yourself now, and then an actual little version of you. I very much picture, I call her little Jay, little Jenna. I picture a little 3, 4, 5, 6-year-old Jenna. The back of my cell phone actually is a picture of me, I think, at age 3. And I practice in moments when I will default into that disempowering mindset or wanting to externalize things outward. It's always the problem out there. That person's out to get me. That person lied to me. When I live in that mindset, I'm keeping myself stuck and I'm keeping myself disempowered. So when I notice this reactivity, like you're saying, it might come in the form of blame for you. For me, if I'm in a reaction to someone or I know that I'm feeling wounded, that might look like a tantrum or a shutdown. I actually answered I was doing the little inner child journal on page 106 in the workbook, which we can talk about in a minute. The last question is a little self-inquiry about inner child. And it says, when my wounded inner child is active, how do I react? For example, tantruming, sulking, detaching, etc. I wrote all of the above, tantrum, and then I find ways to pull away and detach. You said something a few minutes ago that reminded me of this. So I notice this experience of myself. If I'm wounded, if an experience just happened that activated this inner child within me, I can feel it in my face tingling. My heart will start to race. I want to storm off and get as far away from the people I'm with as humanly possible. What's also happening in my mind is devising intricate plans about how I can entirely remove myself from this person's life, how I cannot show up at this thing that they need me for, how I can find the most intimate, vulnerable way to send a message to their heart that they hurt me. Well, what that does is leave me disempowered, where now I've chosen a response to protect myself that literally keeps me incapable of getting my core needs met, of being in a safe environment, of connection, of attunement, of love. I can't have that if I'm over here on my island making sure that I never see Nicole again so that I can make sure I've sent a message to her. So the more we can be compassionate with ourselves and witness this all, I call it a science project. I think that my life and my healing is my greatest science project and science experiment, because I do feel like an active participant, though an active participant that is also watching all of this unfold. And there is a sweet spot that I really do believe you can access when you have practiced enough depersonalizing and realizing I am not the feeling, I'm not the emotion, I'm not what happened to me, I'm not the event. I'm this being that's having all of these different variable experiences. And you can start to see all of it in my mind. I'm very visual. It almost looks like a science lab. All of these experiences, the reactions, the past, the trauma, the memories, they're all data. And how all that data is arranged is going to create the experience I'm having now. So the more I'm aware of all the data that's there, the more I can start to become conscious about it and notice. Even just the other day when something happened, I felt wounded, way in the other room, and I watched my thoughts go into this, like, I'm going to go away. Actually, Nicole, if you want to share that. Nicole was feeling wounded this morning and sent a text that she was leaving for the next 5 days because, and while Nicole and I are very different in some ways, which might be funny to you guys watching and listening, because so many of you are like, are you sisters? Are you twins? You seem like the same. We have different journeys, but we're both very forward. We're both very stubborn. So I knew as soon as I got this text, when I knew Nicole was upset that she was going to go away for a few days, I could see myself in it
instantly. I was like, you know what? Nicole needs a hug and a teddy bear and some extra love, because now she's resorting to, I'm hurt, so I'm going to hop on my island. See you later.
So much like, and you're exactly right, that kind of point of disconnection. If I'm not here, like you're thinking, goes Jenna, right? Not only will you, the people who love me, be upset in my absence, hopefully, if all goes well, right? So it's kind of that, again, I'm going to punish you by not being here. It's that disconnection from, if something is upsetting in this home, I will just pluck myself right out of it and go somewhere else where it's not upsetting. And the reality of it is, as the Jon Kabat-Zinn, the very wise book goes, wherever you go, there you are. And this comes a second habit in addition to disconnection that I'm noticing in myself recently, as I have all of these emotions, you know, stirring inside of me. I'm trying not to be with them in that awareness, like you're beautifully describing. I'm trying to make sense of them. I'm trying to determine exactly what is causing, what is the cause of the feelings I'm having right here, right now, so that once I determine the cause, right, and this one thing that I'm going to say, okay, this is why I'm upset, this is why I'm sad, this is why I'm angry, or whatever I'm feeling, so that then hypothetically, right, at least this is what my subconscious mind is imagining, then I'll just solve the problem, right? I will just take away the issue. Therefore, I can feel better. And endlessly thinking, overanalyzing, trying to figure out the exact cause of the disturbance is another form of avoidance. I'm distracting myself. I'm hyperanalyzing what's happening, trying to make sense of it. And in reality, I'm bypassing experiencing it at all. And the reason I'm bypassing it is because it's uncomfortable. Because again, still from very early on in childhood, I am still learning how to teach myself, both in body and in mind, how to tolerate discomfort, ever expanding, increasing degrees of discomfort. And it is hard for me to do that. And it's safer to either remove myself entirely or to remove myself in my mind by spending so much of my energy locating the cause, all aimed at the same function. Stay away from the discomfort you're feeling, because there's a little child inside of me that doesn't yet feel confident or equipped that I can tolerate this, and that there will come a time, maybe it's in a couple hours, it might even be a couple days, where I will naturally start to feel better. We all go back to those early experiences where we didn't actually feel better, where we've had to just constantly adapt, suppress our wants and needs, and things actually never shifted. That's the memory that we recall. And then that's then exactly what we fear is going to happen now. So in terms of the embodiment practice, I have to teach, I'm still teaching my mind and my body how to tolerate in the embodied experience of feeling that discomfort.
And you should expect discomfort in any healing work, in embracing or connecting with your inner child. There will be discomfort. And whether that discomfort comes in confusion, that you're a grown adult and feeling like you're learning something for the first time that maybe you feel like you should just know, this should be innate to you. I should know how to talk to my inner child. Well, that's not necessarily true if you've actually never connected with or acknowledged this inner child and have actually spent an entire lifetime pushing them away into the background and keeping them in the dark. So you can also imagine, if that's the case, just how timid and uncomfortable and fearful your own inner child is to allow you to access it, to emerge, to come out, to feel safe in your presence. And if this concept is new to you and you're hearing me talk about this other person as if there's literally like another human or another little human here next to me, I understand that, you know, this could be that discomfort. When I say expect it, well, maybe this is the beginning of it. This lady sounds, you know, wild up there talking about this fictitious person. Though this fictitious person actually became a conditioned, molded part of my subconscious mind that works in harmony with my body. So while you can't see this smaller version of me inside of me, my nervous system does, my memory does. The safer that I become in my body and in my healing, the more memories that I recall from my childhood that actually are very painful and very difficult. And I'm recalling them not because they just suddenly appeared out of thin air. They were buried and packed into my subconscious
from my childhood, and I've done such an excellent job at staying unsafe and dysregulated and as far as I could possibly be from them, so I kept them at bay. When I start to settle in, when I start to build trust with myself, which at this point, it's been at least the last 6 years. I think I was 30 when I really was like, all right, I'm done with this shit. I'm going into the trenches. I am healing from the inside out. So 6 years into a journey of writing letters to little Jenna, of putting my hand on my heart, of actually talking to little Jenna, talking to my heart and speaking to this wounded part of me, I have consistently over time created a space of safety where I have allowed this fearful, scared, really terrified and sad little girl in me to be present. In doing so, it's like a floodgate of all of these memories have started to come back, almost painting me a picture as if this little girl inside of me is showing me a replay of her life, of all of the moments that traumatized her, that scarred her, that hurt her, that wounded her, because it was in those moments that locked me into time, that locked my nervous system into a fear state in that experience. And then it continued on in that fear state. I grew, my body grew, though my nervous system and that trauma very much stayed the same. The more I create that safety, the more I can access that past environment, even if you don't have those visions or the memories actually recalling, when you're creating safety, you're allowing that locked down trauma to come forward so that you can then actually process it and then release it.
Going, you know, a little deeper into this concept of safety, for me, it's been so foundational to include my body on this healing journey. You know, when I was entering my 30s as well and really went through my dark night of the soul, and I felt really empty and detached from the entire life that I thought was going to lead me to this path of fulfillment and connection. And when that didn't happen, you know, seeking to understand, well, why am I struggling so much? Why am I seeing these same patterns in everyone that I'm working with? I really met the power, the foundational power of our nervous system. So it's been the daily commitment of, you know, eating nutrient-dense foods, making sure my body is resting, not only at night, sleeping well, throughout the day, you know, taking time off, not always having to be on the go like I was very much throughout my childhood. It means then also moving my body. All of the tension that was stored in my muscles continued to tell my mind, no matter how much I wanted peaceful moment, no matter how much I wanted to be playful or joyful, if my body is telling my mind how stressed it is and not releasing that tension, then I'm never going to have that opportunity. So when I say the holistic work of including my body has been foundationally life-changing, it has, because it's now given me the possibility to not only drop into my body and into the present moment. That's a lot of times why we are distracted with the past. We're distracted in the future. We're in our minds entirely because our body is too unsafe in the moment. The message our mind is getting is the present moment is not a safe place to be. So to expand that discomfort tolerance that I was talking about earlier, that meant those daily commitments to teaching my nervous system itself how to tolerate more and more stress. So for me, again, I can't talk enough about how life-changing that is, because you can't just hear even a podcast like this and say, oh yeah, playfulness. Oh, adults can be playful. Great. Well, I'm going to just flip that switch and be playful. So many of us can't access that because our nervous system, the tension in our muscles, the fact that we're not sleeping at all, the fact that we're not able to eat nutrient-dense foods, we're not feeling safe and supported, we're feeling completely burnt out. We're never going to have those peaceful, joyful, playful moments because our nervous system, our body is never going to feel safe enough.
When you hear dropping into your body is life-changing, it is meant in a literal sense. It is actually life-changing. When you are in your body and you are present, that's what consciousness is, awakening, awareness. It's just being here, which is the only here. Even when we talk about events 20 years ago, when the event 20 years ago was happening, where was it happening? Here. It was still in this same present. And when we tap into this present moment in our bodies and have that awareness, your physiology is literally changing. It's literally giving you a different access to experience the world, to interpret the world, which in turn is going to impact how you then express out into the world.
I think what's really important to keep in mind is, and important for me to keep on top of mind, is that this body that we're talking about beautifully embodying and developing the nervous system regulation and the ability to tolerate different degrees of stress is half of the journey, because our mind is just as much, like we've been talking about, sending messages, even at times judging and assessing what it's noticing happening in our bodies. So in addition to, as we talked about a bit ago, the distractive function of our thoughts, our mental world, by turning the focus away from our body as relief from that discomfort, the next stage of many of our journeys, as it is for mine included, is once I'm learning how to be more present in my body, and like you were sharing earlier, I now have more access to the deeper sensations and emotions that I've been accumulating and suppressing for my entire life. Now there's a mind that's going to sit in judgment of what it's noticing or what it's witnessing. And a couple of episodes ago, we spoke a bit about the inner critic. And I think this topic absolutely 100% applies when we're talking about our inner child, because for a lot of us, that critical voice, whether it was of your parents, your caregivers, your teacher, your peers, whoever it was at one time that judged you or criticized you for whatever it was, your physical appearance, your emotional expression, just your general way of being, whatever it was, a lot of us have internalized that voice. And so now we're hearing that dialogue of critical assessment of don't feel that way, of, oh God, why is your body doing that? And all of this endless judgment. So when you spoke a bit earlier, I think I heard you use the language of speaking to your inner child. It's not about judging ourselves for having that judgmental voice. It's saying, okay, I have a judgmental voice. Maybe I'm often criticizing the way my body looks, just like I learned to. Maybe I'm criticizing my emotional, you know, the sensations that my body is feeling. Whatever it is that you're noticing, hearing this podcast isn't going to remove that voice magically. It's going to be a matter of noticing, redirecting your attention where you're not just continuing down the spiral of that criticism. And then you can begin actually to voice new thoughts, to actually, instead of judging why you shouldn't feel, so I'll just apply this to my current experience. I don't know why I'm feeling angry or a combination of angry or sad right now. And what I'm hearing is all of the reasons why I shouldn't feel that way unless I have a quote unquote good reason, which I'm endlessly searching to find. That's all happening naturally. I notice, and now I can begin to either say aloud or just say in my mind's eye a different dialogue that, you know what? It's okay that you don't know why you're feeling the way you're feeling. It's okay to feel exactly as you are, because that's how you're feeling. And that's what we mean when we say talking to our inner child. It might actually mean saying those things aloud, maybe writing the most powerful thing that your inner child doesn't yet believe. This is where we're kind of having to acknowledge here as well. The second I say that to my inner child, she's not going to be like, oh, okay, great. I now feel in relief. There's probably going to be that resistance. So over time, the more I practice speaking differently to my internal world, the more then I will come to believe that in the future.
There's two great parts of, well, there's a lot of great parts of our workbook, but two of them pertaining to this conversation. If you do have the workbook, How to Meet Yourself, one of these tools is on page 106, and it's the Inner Child Journal. And the other, you kind of just mentioned, is on page 108, and it's just a prompt to write a letter to your inner child, to actually practice kind of speaking them into existence, envisioning them into existence, because the reality is they exist. This mm-hmm. inner child, this inner childlike part of you, it is there. So this is an opportunity to choose, and you certainly don't have to, though I imagine if you're called to this podcast, you're interested and called in some way. Maybe it's that undescribable pull in your body, because there is an incredibly wise and beautifully brilliant and magnificent inner child in you that is reaching out to get its core needs met. And if we can kind of pause for a moment and become aware of this wisdom that's happening in our body, well, that wisdom, those intuitive pulls, all the messages that we're constantly feeling, they're there and available to us. It's, our work to choose to begin witnessing them. You could imagine all of those intuitive pings or messages as a little paper airplane message or a stork being sent from your inner child internally, like, hey, I'm in here. I'm guiding you in the direction. You are always being pulled in a direction to have those needs met, these core needs of our inner child, which we spoke about on the last podcast. It's growth, variety and stimulation, autonomy, connection and love, safety and identity or significance in the world. If we are not having those needs met by ourselves as adults, if we didn't have them met as children, we are reaching to meet them in ways that we're just unconscious to. So writing a letter to your inner child or to this little you, like I call mine little Jay, that's a great space to just begin creating a life and a world around them. And you might surprise yourself. This might seem so far off or confusing or uncomfortable. And suddenly you actually follow through with your commitment to schedule 5 minutes to sit down and write. And when you start talking to your little inner child, you know, dear little Jenna, dear little Charlie, whoever it is, you might notice that suddenly you have all these emotions and these tears, or your hand just can't stop writing because so much is there. That's what I was referencing earlier when I talk about that, the trauma or those experiences, those memories, the emotion. It's not out there in the invisible world. It is locked internally inside of you, waiting for a space to be aligned where you say, hey, it's safe for you to come out and to express right now. So to help guide you with that, on page 106, the Inner Child Journal breaks down witnessing your inner child into four different categories. It's the experience of your inner child, the thoughts of your inner child, the feelings of your inner child, and the reactions. I just shared my response to earlier to the reactions. When my inner child is wounded, my reaction wants to go into this sulking tantrum where I'm devising a plan to completely remove myself from all of the people around me that I love. That was something that I just wrote a few minutes before this podcast in actually sitting down to literally do page 106 of the workbook. So in the experience section, to help you call to mind, I'm just going to read a series of questions for you to percolate on, to maybe pause and jot down to help you in exploring and witnessing your own inner child. Experience: what happens to activate my inner child wound? What's happening that you notice then I'm activated? For me, it was when someone scolds me, if someone's yelling or there are loud noises, or if I'm not chosen. If I'm not chosen, I watch this whole wash come over me of like heartbreak, of wounding. That's my inner child. When my wounded inner child is active, what am I thinking? When my personal inner child is acted, little Jay is thinking that I am not valued, I'm not appreciated, and that I'm disposable. You can just grab another one and toss me to the curb. Feelings: when my wounded inner child is active, what am I feeling? When I asked this to little Jay, she said, tingling in my face, increased heartbeat, a lump in my throat. I feel weighted. I kind of feel like someone actually took a sledgehammer and I'm made of glass and I just shattered to the ground and feel heavy on the ground. This last one is reactions, which we just went over. My wounded inner child, when it is active, how do I react? For example, do you tantrum? Do you sulk? Do you detach? What do you notice you do? As you ask yourselves these questions and begin to explore, even if nothing comes to mind now, keep these at front of mind throughout your day. You're going to have to choose to be aware of them, choose to be conscious of them, and want to know what your inner child is like and be curious for it to even be in the front of your mind to start scanning your day. When you notice how you respond to things, maybe that hurt you. If you notice yourself throwing a tantrum or going to blame someone or reacting, start to observe and notice these things. Because even if you can't remember your childhood or the past or what that actual little version of you was like as a human, you can very likely get a good feel and idea for how it was for them by simply observing how adult you is responding and reacting to difficult or emotionally extenuating circumstances in the present moment.
I can't help but sit over here and have a giggle to myself as I'm, you know, thinking and hearing your little inner child, you know, who wants to pack up and run away and, you know, having a dual conscious moment myself of being like, oh, okay, well, you're leaving. Good. The door's locked.
See ya.
the locks are changed. So bye-bye. Because now my little child in this moment, right, was feeling not considered. Oh, I'm not good enough. I'm not worth enough coming back to. So you know what? Screw you. And I'm having a giggle. Acknowledging that, I mean, this whole entire podcast is really about this relationship that we have with this little inner child part of our subconscious mind. And at the same time, we are all operating, trying to interact with other individuals who, whether we're in a romantic relationship with them or a friendship with them, or they're our family members, or again, the stranger on the street, a lot of times the giggle that I was having was thinking about us all walking around this world, trying to navigate it in these adult bodies. Yet what the large majority of us at least are doing are acting from these wounded childlike places, just like I had the experience in this exact moment, right? So we're doing that whether or not we're aware of it or not. So our hope in sharing or having this episode where we're really breaking down, so I'm probably imagine we could probably continue to talk about this for another couple hours, because there is so much. When you become aware of all of these moments in time where you're relying on those old habitual ways to navigate your emotions, to navigate your relationships, when you're just not feeling, right, creative, playful, joyful as your resting state, all of that is indicative of your inner child. And as you become more and more aware and witness to it, you can have these moments where you're like, wow, I can see my inner child's reaction. I can feel driven to say, screw you in the moment. And I can still stay grounded enough to speak to myself, to calm myself through that initial reaction and to make a different choice outwardly. And the more you come in contact with your inner child, and I hope our different journeys, though similar and different in many ways, can maybe help inform your journeys, or maybe just begin with curiosity. Maybe some of you listening, this is the first time you're even really hearing what inner child work could look like. And as you do engage in this journey, you'll have more of those moments where you can almost watch the movies kind of playing in your mind of those reactions you can feel in your body. And over time, you can have more space to continue. Let's bring this beautifully full circle. To empower you now as the adult self, to teach your body that you can actually tolerate hearing something that's uncomfortable. You might even be able to depersonalize it, like you were sharing earlier, right? I don't have to take what Jenna is inclined to want to do in this moment as any indication of my worthiness. I might not immediately believe it, though the more I show up in action, the more I show up in care for myself and my inner child through my physical wellness, through my emotional wellness, the more you'll have that space that I was just describing.
So to end this episode on our own inner child experiences, imagining and wondering what your inner child experiences are like, I'm sitting here right now actually envisioning whoever's watching or listening to this as a child, as a small baby. And I used to do that often. I remember riding the subway for years in Boston and just staring at everyone and thinking, you were a baby at one point. Everyone there from all walks of life originated as a baby. Once they landed on the earth side, they were a baby in human form. We were all children. We then grew, have these lives that we do now. And that child for many of us got locked into the past, and it deserves to be loved. If you look around at all the adults of the world and you actually saw us as 1, 2, 3-year-old little babies running around in diapers, we would have a lot more compassion in general and instantly, because we'd be able to witness it. So it does help to also paint that picture that this small child within you is also the originating force of everyone around you. So to guide you in connecting with that inner child and maybe writing a letter to that inner child, we'll leave you with a few writing a letter to your inner child prompts that come directly from How to Meet Yourself. These are on page 108. And I'm going to share with you at the end, right before we did this podcast, I wrote a few sentences to little Jenna of whatever came up in the moment, because I never know what's going to happen in that moment in time or what will be there. And while I used to write letters to little Jenna all the time, I have clearly steered away from that for some time. And even that's interesting to me because I'm like, well, what is it that you're not wanting to connect to? There is some wounding and some pain there, likely a large amount of grief, especially since the passing of my brother, that I can see the same tendency and behavior of my own childhood where I'm just on a different path and I'm steering away from it as fast as I can, almighty, because it's painful and it hurts. So it's a space of grace. I would give yourself some quiet, uninterrupted time to allow yourself to be in your own safety and allow whatever comes up to come up. So some questions to ask yourself when sitting down to write a letter to little you. What is it I would like to tell my child self? What did my child self need to know or hear but was never told? If I could go back in time and offer encouragement, love, or support to my child self, what would I say? I followed these prompts exactly, and I will share with you an example of what this could look like. Yours are all going to look different because we are all different beings and all different children. So mine says, "Dear wounded little Jenna, you are so wanted. You are capable of extraordinary things. You are smart, wise, witty, and resourceful. You are pure love and meant to share it with and to love the world. Your experiences are your gift to turn trauma and tragedy into triumph and teachings." That all took about 5 minutes to come forward. You might get one sentence out. You might get a word out. You might just get a lot of tears or a lot of anger or a lot of emotion. All of that is hidden within, waiting to be surfaced. So when you do follow through with committing to write a letter to your inner child and you sit down with that 5 minutes of space to do this, maybe you write nothing. That's okay. It's intentionally taking the space to say to your inner child, "I see you. I love you. I know you exist. What do you need to hear? What do you have to tell me?" We're literally just beginning to create space to allow their existence to actually take up space in their lives, because our entire lives, they very likely thought that they take up way too much space, which is why they've been hiding in the background for so long. We would love to hear what's coming up for you in this episode. If you do write a letter to your own inner child or you asked yourselves those questions even while listening, drop us a comment on our YouTube channel. Of course, share this with friends. Send it on to those that you want to partake in this conversation with. We also always appreciate when you guys drop us a like or leave us a review. We intentionally do this podcast ad-free for your viewing and listening experience. So your engagement is beloved and cherished by us and also helps us spread these conversations around the world so that we can all heal together and really all embrace each other's own inner child. We love you and we thank you for tuning in and look forward to being with you again next week.